The views you are about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests. They are not necessarily views that are shared by the organisations to which Kira is associated.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
So, hi everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. And today, I am really delighted to be joined by the broadcaster, journalist, and presenter, Victoria Derbyshire. So, welcome to my podcast, Victoria.
Hi, Kira. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
I am very well. And in fact, it's quite surprising because literally 2 days ago, you were on Newsnight with me because a story was in the news about a human rights watchdog saying that the UK and Welsh governments hadn't kind of made enough progress in helping disabled people live full and rewarding lives. So, yeah, you were on our programme. So that was fabulous because I hadn't actually seen you for quite a while, I don't think.
No, I hadn't seen you since pre-COVID times. So, yes, no, it's lovely to see you. And thank you for having me on. But please, could you tell my listeners about your career in radio and TV? So I know you've done quite a lot of things, but it'd be really lovely to hear what you've done. So over to you.
Okay. So I worked as a reporter in local radio, in commercial radio, in the 90s. And then I got a job in a BBC local radio station, again, as a reporter in the newsroom. Then I pitched an idea for a show to the local radio manager. And he said, OK, let's try it out. Then I moved into presenting news shows on BBC local radio. And then eventually, in the late 90s, I was asked if I would like to join Radio 5 Live, which I absolutely love that radio station. So I leapt at the chance and I ended up doing the breakfast show for a few years, which I loved. Then I moved to the mid-morning show, which I did for, gosh, so many years. Again, very interactive with listeners' stories, you know, interviews, that kind of thing. Then we had an idea for a kind of TV version of that radio show, my very good friend and editor, Louisa Compton, and myself. And that was commissioned, which was great. So we did that for 5 years. We broke loads of stories and, you know, we won some awards. And then we got closed down before COVID. And then what did I do then? Then I worked on the news channel through COVID, which was, you know, there were so many people tuning in because nobody knew what was going on. And then I applied for the job presenting Newsnight after Emily Maitlis left, and I got it. And that's what I do now. Oh, and I also do two podcasts, one which is called And Then Came Breast Cancer, which I do for the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, and one I do for the BBC Sounds, which is Ukrainecast, which is obviously about the conflict in Ukraine.
Fantastic. And actually, I was going to ask you about your breast cancer podcast, because obviously I know you've had a personal journey with breast cancer. Would you be happy just to talk about it a little bit, only if you're happy to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, I was diagnosed in 2015. So it's a few years ago now. And I was 46 and it was a real shock. I could not believe it.
Yeah.
It was a blow, and I have two boys. At the time, they were 8 and 11, and my partner of 17 years. It was just overwhelming. And then there's a period of time where you actually don't know if your cancer is going to be treatable or if you might die. So it's really, really stressful and quite traumatic. Eventually, I was told my cancer would be treatable, albeit with a mastectomy and 6 rounds of chemo and 30 cycles of radiotherapy. But when I knew I was going to survive, I thought I can absolutely do that treatment. Of course I can, because the alternative is horrific.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had treatment for 301 days between 2015 and 2016. And I found losing my hair much more traumatic than losing a breast, if I'm being honest. Because I was doing my TV program every day, and so I like people would know if I'd lost my hair. So I wore a wig, and you know, that really helped me, you know, get do my normal stuff, if you like, get on with my normal life. And yeah, when we got through it, and my partner had said, Mark, who was brilliant, who totally stepped up, he said, right, if we get through this, should we get married? And I said, yeah, why not? Yeah. We'd been together for 17 years. So, yeah. And the boy really wanted us to get married. So, yeah, a couple of years after finishing the treatment, we got married.
That's amazing. And I remember seeing it on the news that you got married, and I remember seeing the photos, and I was so pleased for you, and I was so thrilled, because obviously I've obviously sadly lost family members to cancer myself, and I've seen their battles. It's not pretty, it's not nice, it's heartbreaking. So I kind of know what you went through from seeing my family members and their struggles and their treatment. And yeah, I even sadly lost my cousin Amy. She was only 48.
Oh my gosh.
And that's no age at all to cancer. Cancer doesn't care who you are, where you are, when you are, it will get you. And my cousin Amy, it was too late. She started getting ill, then she got worse, and then 2018, the doctors just said to her, there's nothing more, and and it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Can I ask, do you know what kind of cancer was that?
So I believe it was bowel. Right. Yeah, it was bowel, I think it spread to liver, and it was very sad. And sadly, I didn't get to go to her funeral. I'm not going to go into it because it's personal reasons, but I didn't get to go to her funeral. So I haven't had that kind of process. I haven't gone through that goodbye process myself. So I keep thinking any minute, like, there's going to be a phone call or there's going to be an email. And luckily, I've kept the last lovely email I had from her. I've still got that, and I'm keeping that because I can look at it. If I'm having a day where I'm feeling a bit low, I can look at it and go, actually, she's watching over me. I know she'd be really proud. And obviously, off the back of that, I went for my first cervical smear test, and I had put off going. I didn't understand the letter that I got. I didn't understand the leaflet that came with it. It was really inaccessible.
Okay, that's so interesting, isn't it?
And so I've been doing lots of campaigning with the Eva Peel, who I'm a proud ambassador for. I'm also an ambassador for Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust as well, so I'm an ambassador for two. And I've been doing lots and lots of campaigning with them around cervical screening, making easy read guides about how to check yourself, about going for screening. So I'm helping making those, which I'm very proud of. And I think the message I think today with you is, actually the other day I went to a meeting and there were some people I met from Breast Cancer Now, which is another charity. And they gave me some stats around breast cancer and awareness and gut checking and screening. And it's really shocking. And I'm like, why? I don't get why the age limit is 50 to go for screening. Like, do they think it's less important before you're 50?
I don't think it's that. I mean, I've also questioned that, and the explanation that's been given to me by clinicians who looked after me, who I trusted with my life, and they saved my life. So I absolutely trust what they say. They say at the moment, and it may change over time as we learn more all the time, if screening happened for women, if breast screening, i.e. going to have a mammogram, was required for before the age of 50, what you might end up with is interventions that aren't necessary. That's the reason why it's at 50. But, you know, who knows, that may, you know, we all know people who've had breast cancer below the age of 50, and you know, sadly, people who've died from it before the age of 50. But yeah, I like you, I do work with various Cancer Research UK, Future Dreams, Breast Cancer Now, about raising awareness, how to check, how to, you know, how to say to women, look, what you're looking for on your breast is something that is not your normal. So if something's slightly unusual for you, then it's just worth going straight to the GP and getting it checked out. And more likely than not, it will be nothing, but please go to the GP.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important message that I'd like to get out of this podcast with you today, is go for breast screening, go and get checked. If something's not normal, go and get checked. You know, it might be nothing, you know, so it's kind of the same kind of messaging, which is really helpful. So that was really interesting to meet people from that charity, because I knew more about cervical screening than I did about breast screening. So I've now done my homework around breast cancer and breast screening, and it's very interesting. So thank you. That was really great. Thank you, Victoria. So I know the other show you did was the Full Monty. Could you talk about that as well, please?
Oh my gosh, I absolutely love doing this. So for anybody who didn't see it or come across it, the ITV's The Real Full Monty was a cancer awareness raising show. And it was a group of women who'd either had cancer or been touched by cancer, who got together, and we were choreographed by Ashley Banjo, and we did. He taught us this routine, and basically, by the end of the routine, the idea was that we would not to the TV audience, but to the audience in the theatre, we would show our breasts, basically, not for any. You know, prurient reasons, but simply to show, okay, we've all had breast cancer, or you know, someone in our families have breast cancer, and we are proud of what we do, what we are, and what the shape our bodies are. But the whole point of the program was, look, women, you need to check your own breasts. That was the whole point of the program.
Yeah.
So actually making the program was incredible. Again, you know, made some great friends, Colleen Nolan, Michelle, various people who obviously I'm still in touch with.
Yeah.
Working with Ashley Banjo was amazing, and met members of Diversity, and they were just so patient with us all, because none of us could dance, or some of us could, some of them could, because they were in groups and, you know, on stage and whatever. But the impact the program had was astonishing. So the first year we did it, something like 5.5 million, 6 million people watched it. I was getting messages from people afterwards, from women saying, I checked myself in the shower this morning because I watched your program last night. I found something. I've been to the doctors. It's all right. It's not cancer. And then I had messages from people saying, I found something. I went to the doctors. It is cancer. They've caught it. Thank you for the, you know, thank you for the program. Yeah. It was just, it had such a massive impact. And before I did that, during my own treatment, I'd made video diaries of the treatment that I'd been through, which millions and millions of people watch, which are still out on YouTube. And it was a similar sort of thing. It's look, this is what happens. This is what you do. This is how you check. And it just, A, it was a really important public service kind of program. But B, my God, we had fun. We had such a laugh.
So again, it was
one of those experiences where you go, okay, I'm going to do this. You know, I've no idea how long I've got on this earth. This is fun and really important.
Yeah. I saw it, and it was the most powerful thing. And obviously, I have family members going through it at that time. And so to me, it really spoke to me. And I was just like, this is so, so important for this show to be seen by people. So I loved it. And to use the song, This Is Me.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. I cried. I don't know about you, but I seriously cried.
Oh, God, we cried. I mean, I think it was so, I don't know what it was, but it felt so, we were moved and the audience was moved. It was kind of poignant and also uplifting, you know?
Yeah. Oh, It was amazing. So do you have any other plans for any other shows at the moment? Have you signed up for anything, or are you doing anything else in the next year or so?
No. I've only been at Newsnight for just under a year. Okay. So it's quite intense, and so I focus on that. And with two podcasts as well, that is, and my family,
yeah,
and my two dogs.
That's enough.
I'm happy. Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to chat about or ask me?
Yeah. What was it like through COVID for you, Kira? Because certainly on Thursday night, maybe you said something, and I thought, oh, I must ask you about COVID, which it wasn't the kind of subject of the interview that we were doing on Thursday. But was that really, what was it like?
I'm going to use two words. Absolutely awful.
Was it?
Absolutely awful. So a few days before the announcement was made by Boris that we all had to stay at home forever, I was sent home from work. It was really strange. I had gone into work on the Monday and I put my bag down, got my computer on, started work. Everything was normal. Everything was like going like clockwork. And I got hauled into a room. So I was like, paranoia city. I was like, oh God, what have I done? Who have I done it to? Like serious, like paranoia. And then they went, you've got to go home. And I went, sorry, what? And they went, one person from our team has the symptom of this thing. And because you sit quite close, out of safety, we're going to send you home. I went, okay. So I literally had to pack up my desk. I had to literally, like, take everything with me. I got home. And then, obviously, the next day, Boris made the announcement that we all had to stay at home. So then I worked for about 3 weeks. Then I was furloughed. I was put on furlough. I was furloughed from the April to the June, end of June. Then I was brought back to MenCap to work. But instead of going back into the campaigns team that I was in, I was asked to do a special job role, making all the COVID guidance accessible with our comms team, which I did for a few months. But again, every day it kept changing, so I had to keep changing it every day. It felt like every hour we were writing something different. Yeah. So that was a big challenge. And then I was taken away from that role and put into the transformation team. So I was working with them to make their work really accessible as a team and to think about our big plan, because we were about to launch that. And then a few months ago, my manager, Mandy, sadly told me that she was going to be leaving. And I got on so well with her, and we were an amazing team together working around inclusion at MenCap. So I then was like, well, what do I do now? Where do I go? And it was a bit unsettling. It was a bit sad. And so I went to our comms director and I had a chat with her. And I said, look, I'm not very happy. Is there anything I could do here? So she said, let me have a think. Let me kind of have a chat with people. And literally 2 weeks later, she waved a magic wand and brought me back into the comms team. And so I'm going to be doing some comms work. I'm going to be doing some work with our parliament and policy team, which I'm really excited about. I'm going to be doing some work with our media team. So hopefully I'll get a little bit more media highlighting soon, which would be lovely. So I've really missed that. I've really missed not being in the media. I've got some potential exciting bits of work coming my way over the next few months.
Brilliant.
So watch this space. Got amazing more podcasts to do with more amazing guests. So keep watching Kira's Pink Sparkle podcast. Let's see where I am this time next year.
Exactly. Yeah, you are flying, Kira. You are absolutely flying, which is brilliant.
It's amazing. And as a person with a learning disability, I just want to show what's possible with the right support, with the right guidance, you can achieve. And that's just what I'm here to do.
Totally. And you're doing it. You're absolutely doing it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Victoria. Honestly, it's been really lovely to chat.
Oh, thank you for asking me. Thank you so much. And thank you for your great questions. And it's always lovely to chat to you. You know that.
Thank you. Victoria, keep being the amazing presenter you are. Keep being inclusive. Keep being disability champion. And I know you are anyway, but keep doing it. And hopefully I'll see you soon.
I will definitely keep doing it. Thank you so much, Kira. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria.
Bye-bye. Take your care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
It was all put together by James Phillips from It's That Friday Feeling, and you can hear our show every single Friday from 3 till 5, only on Surrey Hills Community Radio. So check us out, tell your friends, we'll see you soon!